This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Dr. Timothy Leary's work researching psychedelic drugs made him one of the most interesting and controversial figures of the 1960s. Known for the phrase, turn on, tune in, and drop out, President Richard Nixon once called him the most dangerous man in America. In October of 1977, Leary came to La Crosse as part of a college speaking tour and was a guest on Newsmakers. The start and finish of his time on Newsmakers with a La Crosse media panel was entertaining, to say the least.
You were an early advocate of LSD usage and drug usage and this type of thing. Do you look back?
No, that's not true.
It's a good start.
What's the next bit?
Do you look back on that period of time with any recollections of it doing any good?
The 1960s?
Right.
Yeah, I think the 1960s was the most volatile, liberating, important decade in recorded history. I think the first time in recorded history a mass, middle-class, working-class population was given the privilege and the opportunity to do what only the upper class and the elite and the nobility could do before that. That is to define themselves and their own bodies and their own consciousness as the center of their future and their energies. It was the most democratic, liberating era in history. I don't think there's one aspect of American culture that wasn't reviewed, reformed, revised, improved during that decade. So much happened during the 60s, it's going to take us a long time to let the smoke settle and to really appreciate how all of our lives have been changed for the better by that decade.
What sort of things were changed that you saw, or what sort of effects now are coming out in the 70s that you saw developing during the 60s?
Well, I see the 60s as a kind of a flowering period. It was a period of self-discovery. For the first time in history, people like myself said to average working class Americans, young Americans, you can do it. Drop out. Don't listen to what society tells you. Don't listen to the old worn out creeds. You make up your own mind. You do your own thing. Now, this meant, you know, when you give people liberty, particularly internal liberty, when you give them the chance to create their own realities, they're going to go in a million ways. So it's true that in the 60s you had all sorts of kooky situations. You had people dressing in wild costumes. You had them hair long, hair short, bald hair. They were dressing like Indians. They were dressing like Hindus. They were dressing like 18th century. That's okay, because when you give people the courage and the confidence to do what they want, naturally they're going to, and I'm sure there are a lot of silly things happen. It was a self-indulgent period, but you take that for granted. The great thing about it was sometimes they talk about there's a nostalgia about the movement of the 60s. If we could only go back to the movement. Well, there was no movement. I was there. I can tell you there was no one movement. There were 1,000 movements. There were as many movements as anyone had hips to shake or had new ideas to shake up in their own minds. Do your own thing. Look within. Find your own inner authentic compass readings and live it out your own way. That was the message as I saw it.
I would like to just ask you what happened to two other key factors of what we, at least, on the receiving end of the national media, understood. We also heard turn on, which to the national media meant LSD and drugs, and you also took exception with the kind of representation that Paul Lowry said that you advocated. What really happened? What didn't we hear right?
Well, certainly as scholars and intelligent students of the media that we have assembled in this room, you're hip enough to know that the media gives you exactly what the middle class wants to be told. So you deal in images, you deal in the half-baked, superficial notions. Everything's much more complicated than what the media tells us. It all comes down to human situations. Now, all reporters and journalists want to confront me on the drug issue. Didn't I advocate the use of, shooting alcohol in the vein and so forth? Yes, I said in the 60s, It was your business, what you did with your body. Who and what you put in your body was your own business, and the government had nothing to say about it. Sure, your family had the right and the duty to talk over with you how you're going to handle your consciousness, but it was not the affair of the government. Now, as far as drugs were concerned, sure, there was an enormous explosion of drug use in the 60s. I want to point out, though, that America was a drug-taking country before the 60s. Alcohol, 60 million social drinkers or heavy drinkers. Nicotine, we were a drugged-up culture. Valium, you talk about drugs. Marijuana and LSD are way down on the list of the drugs of use in the 60s. Do you want me to acknowledge the validity of the drug experience? Many of your listeners want to know what I'm going to say about that. Yes, I flatly acknowledge the validity of the drug experience. Not in general, I'm not advocating drugs. I'm simply pointing out to you that the nervous system is a biochemical instrument, that there are hundreds of drugs that can move your head in any direction you want to move your consciousness. The intelligent person today is sophisticated enough to know there are many options. That's the key, options. You can take any one drug or combination of drugs, or you don't have to take any drugs at all. But you have those options, and these options are what freedom's all about. Sure.
Did you consider yourself a political prisoner during the 60s and up until your recent release from prison?
Was I a political prisoner? Well, I think almost the entire country was involved in political prisonhood during the 60s. You know, Watergate was all about Gordon Liddy trying to bust into the office of Larry O'Brien, the head of the Democratic Party. We all suffered a restriction of our liberties during the 60s. Since I was one of the spokespersons of the 60s, sure, it came down on me a little bit heavier, but we all suffered through that. Yes, I'd say I was the number one political prisoner of the Nixon, Agnew, Liddy, Hoover administration.
Hoover. O.J. Edgar.
Yeah, who'd you think I was talking about?
One never knows Herbert. Because some people would insist that he hasn't died. And his...
is Herbert Hoover still with us?
talking about the newfound freedom of the 60s, are the American people moving in a positive direction with that in the 70s as far as cultural evolution?
What do you think?
I don't know. I think they're still a little bit fragmented. They haven't, pushed it to a solid point. They aren't pushing.
Well, that's good. I believe in cultural fragmentation. I don't want cultural homogeneity. I don't want us to be an anthill in which we all wore the same kind of clothes and same kind of hair length and use the same cliché. So I'm all in favor of diversity, and that's the great lesson of the 60s. Okay, let's compare the 60s and the 70s, because I think that's behind your question. I think that the young people today, the college students today, are more intelligent and more sophisticated by a factor of 100 than those that preceded them. They say that the kids today are laid back and self-indulgent and sensual and just looking after their own affairs. I say great, because you have to learn how to get your own stuff together before you can rush out and change the world. There was too much rhetoric in the late 60s, particularly when the stupid politicians moved in, like Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, who kept saying, never mind feeling good, feel bad, and kill your mother and your father. I mean, that's not what we were saying. We were trying to get everyone together in the 60s. I think that the 70s students aren't buying rhetoric. They're not buying slogans. They're very suspicious about cliches. They are concentrating on their own career, on their own intelligence, on their own style of life. There's a tremendous... I like to say that the 60s was a time of... self-discovery. It was wonderful. The first time that any middle-class, working class had the luxury to discover yourself. Because before the 60s, everyone, your parents, were robots to the system. 8 to 5, 40 years, and then on the assembly line, and you get a gold watch at the end of it. They were slaves. So that the 60s brought about that great, quiet revolution of self-discovery. Find out who you are. Never mind geography. Let's look at the internal geography. I think the 70s are more sophisticated because it's a period of self-actualization. It's one thing to discover, you know, who you are, but then you got to get to work and do something about it. The kids, they've gone back to work. Of course they should go back to work. But they're not going back to work in the old Horatio Alger sense of killing yourself for GM or for General Electric or for Blatt's beer or whatever it is. They're going back to work now to barter their time for money, to spend that money on snowplows or skis or cocaine or whatever they want to do. It's their business.
You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. We're marking the 40th anniversary of Newsmakers in the La Crosse area with a 1970s interview featuring psychologist and 60s icon Timothy Leary.
I grew up in the 60s and was involved in the student demonstrations, and most of the people involved with me have now turned, as you would say it, into the establishment. The entire people behind the Chicago demonstrations have gone into the establishment.
Yeah.
You haven't.
No.
We feel that we grew up.
Yeah.
That was the reason we did it. What happened in your situation?
I guess I haven't grown up. I want to tell you about the 60s demonstrations. You know, I was never a politician in the 60s. I said then, and I say now, you're a fool if you think that the politicians are going to solve your problems. The politicians aren't going to do that. Certainly we understand that. I think the Carter-Ford election was a testimony to the intelligence of the American people. What was it? 53% of the people voted and 47% stayed home. I think that's symptomatic of the fact that we realize that you got to do it yourself, or you got to do it with your friends. There's no welfare state. There's no big brother in Washington that's going to solve either your problems or the government's problems. So that I never got along with the activists in the 60s. The first time I met Jerry Rubin, I realized he's a Boy Scout moron, and he could just as well have been a young Hitler youth, or he could have just as well have been a young communist youth or a young Boy Scout leader. Whatever was conventional, he was going to go out there and say it. So when he was going around saying, kill your mother and your father, he doesn't have a brain in his head. Now he's going around. 15 years later, he's discovered psychology. You know, 15 years ago, I was a psychologist at Harvard. So I don't have much respect for the politicians. Did you read that article in Newsweek about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when all those heavy-duty, big-shot politicians from the 60s admitted that they didn't have a clue as to what they were talking about then? Now they can say it. Rennie Davis, who led the Chicago 7 thing, is selling insurance, and Jerry Rubin selling bad cocaine.
Is there any way that you would say then that Stokely Carmichael has remained true among all those of the 60s?
Well, I don't believe in staying true. You got to change. I've never stayed in one consistent situation. My Lord, in the last 15 years, we've gone through more changes, more evolutionary metamorphoses. Wow, it's just you just can't stay true to some... that's static Newtonian thinking. You've got to keep awake and alert to new things that are happening, and new things are happening. Within 10 or 15 years, everyone listening to this radio broadcast is going to have the option of going to space, living in big 30-mile-long space worlds in which you'll have ski resorts and three-dimensional tennis clubs and Tahitian villages. Everyone listening to this broadcast, if they're in reasonable health and have reasonable luck, will be able to double or triple their lifespan. So there are a lot of exciting alternatives ahead that should, we've got to understand the past, but the American people and the human race has been backing into the future until very recently. Well, the time is coming, and we can't afford to do that anymore. We've got to look ahead and create the future. And that's the title of my lecture here tonight, The Creation, the Conscious and Intelligent Creation of the Future.
What are you going to do with all these people that are 90, 100, 120 years old? We have a population problem now. We have millions of people on welfare. We have millions of people who can't eat throughout the world. We're just going to be tripling it or doubling it. Do you have any solutions for this, or you know, cut solution. The people down? Or
I gave
what?
You the solution. Can you think back on what I just said?
Send them off to space?
Yeah. According to Professor Gerard O'Neill of Princeton, top drawer, respectable physicist, and the NASA committees that he's working with, and the blueprints are being worked out right now by Boeing and Rockwell and the aerospace people, we'll have more people leaving the planet Earth, migrating from the planet Earth by the year 2020, than we have being born. The situation, my friends, is like 1493. We're going to be leaving. This is the old world. We're going to be building new worlds in space. And as a matter of fact, the longevity, which down here would become a nightmare if you had people living 300 and 400 years old. Gee, you'd have John Denver and Frank Sinatra singing golden oldies at Caesar's Palace, right? I can't handle that now. But with space colonization, we got plenty of places to go, new worlds to build. We're going to get smarter, so there's a lot to do. But we can't do it on a limited planet, a shrinking planet with a growing population and decreasing energy resources.
If we're looking to expand, though, into space and to other areas and you want to develop out there, what's going to happen to the people left behind? What's going to develop here? Where are we going to go if you're stuck here?
If you don't want to go, you're going to be in exactly the same situation that Europeans were in. We had the same conversation in 1493. I said, listen, we can go over to the New World. Columbus showed we can go there. You say, well, what's going to happen to us? You're all going to go there and leave us here? Sure, you can stay back here if you want. You can go up there and tourist flights. It's going to cost $3,000 round trip. If you like it, stay up there. If you don't want to, come back here, and you can astound the Earthlings with your slideshows of what it was like up there. We've been through this before. We've been through it when we left the water and climbed down to the shoreline. When we left Europe and came over here, we're doing it again. We're a restless migrant race, Americans. And by the way, I've become a red, white, and blue, all-out American. I think America is the place where the courageous people, the energetic people, the dynamic people, some crook, sure, on run from the law, that's all right. But America has always, at least for the last 300 years, led the way for personal freedom and the kind of electricity that that allows you to be imaginative. So it's that impulse, it's that wave we're still riding.
I see the 60s as a time that just created the mood to accept things like space flight that you're proposing.
Yeah.
Not really a time, as you seem to be suggesting, that make the people more free, more open, more intelligent.
Well, that's a shotgun question. You know, there are a lot of ideas in your question. Certainly, the 60s allowed people to be more free, didn't they? Before the 60s, everybody had to have their hair cut and slicked back, you know, John Dean type. Before the 60s, you had one option. That was to get drunk on Saturday night. Before the 60s, you know, it was Eisenhower years. So you can't deny that the 60s opened up a liberation of lifestyle, can you?
I might, in terms of the same type of social pressure used to get people to have long hair and smoke marijuana or take LSD that the children of the 60s used. It was the same as the type of pressure their parents used to get them to slick their hair back and get drunk on Saturday nights.
I see. So you're saying that the 60s was just another form of conformity?
I'm asking you if you see it that way.
Well, we did learn from the 60s that everybody lives in their own reality bubble, that your brain creates your world, my brain creates mine. Certainly my reality bubble is different from yours. I think that the divergency of lifestyle, my Lord, you had people going off to India, you had people going to South America, you had people going to the countries, you had people joining these hundreds of sects and cults and Jesus freaks and guru freaks and swami freaks and, you know, you name it, there's not one porthole of the body that doesn't have a Bible and a guru. I think that the 60s did open things up. Now, what was the rest of your question?
Well, I wanted to see if you really believe that the 60s was so unique that since that point in time, people will be more intelligent. That's what you're implying.
The 60s was not very intelligent. It was more a time of self-indulgent exploration. I'd say the 70s is a period of breakthrough intelligence. See, the long-haired kids of the 60s, 10 years ago, are now 10 years older, and they're running their research laboratories. They're running the police departments. They're running the, they're running the White House. The kids around Carter were stealing hubcaps and running rock concerts in Atlanta, Georgia 10 or 15 years ago. So, I think there's a realization now that just getting loaded, just getting high, just feeling good is no ultimate solution. What we said in the 60s and what I say again right now is get as high as you can get. But remember, the higher you get, the more precise your navigation has to be.
Are you sorry that it took a PhD to get where you are?
I'm not sorry about anything.
One question about you. You're talking about the 60s as a time of consciousness and breakthroughs and various things, and most, you use the term middle class America, look at the 60s at a period of time where sexual mores broke down,
yeah.
Kids willingly and wantonly broke the law by smoking marijuana and taking LSD and taking drugs. Do you think that this is good? Because now we've gotten to the 70s where it's accepted for this new sexual,
yeah,
promiscuous, whatever, taking a marijuana, the whole bit, the whole trip. Is this worth it? Or are we losing something?
What
the American ideal, if you want to put it that way.
The American ideal, as I see it, what you are calling the American ideal is the South American ideal. The American ideal is, number one, a nose-thumbing attitude towards centralized authority, a distrust of militarism, and a glorification of do your own thing. It's a pioneer, frontier notion of get out there and live your own way. William Penn founded Pennsylvania because he didn't like the Church of England. Lord Calvert, the Catholic, founded Maryland because he wanted to be free. The Pilgrim Fathers didn't like what the guys in City Hall were doing, so they were literally exiles and fugitives and lawbreakers, to use your phrase, to come in those leaky boats and come over here. The Mormons, Joseph Smith was a lawbreaker who had to head out of town with his crew to go across the perilous prairies in his spaceships. We're a country of people who thumb their nose at any bureaucrat. We hate bureaucrats. We glorify in the individual the loner that's willing to go off and do his own thing. It's the American tradition, and this business of centralized law enforcement and so forth, that's exactly what our foremothers and fathers fought for. And I encourage all your listeners to remember you're the seed descendants of dissidents and outlaws and rebels that wanted to head west because they wanted to do their own thing, and goodbye to City Hall. Listen, I've only brought to Wisconsin about 24 pieces of wisdom, and I've run out of them now.
Okay,
I really don't have any
understand.
More left. I've got a lecture to give. My voice is giving out. I thank your intelligent interest. I thank you for inviting me here, but I really think I better wander off now.
Dr. Timothy Leary ended his visit to Newsmakers and the questioning with a La Crosse media panel in the fall of 1977 very abruptly. With a few minutes left in the show and to fill the time, the staff at WLSU played the song Legend of a Mind by the Moody Blues, which contains the lyric, Timothy Leary's dead. Leary did die in 1996 at age 75. The moderator for that interview was WLSU's then public affairs director, Jack Marlowe. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to a website with details about Timothy Leary's work. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. Yeah.